First of all, I'd like to greet each one here this morning with that precious name of our Savior, Lord and Jesus Christ, the one who was, the one who is, and the one who will always be. I've been very blessed already, sitting throughout this weekend. I've learned a lot. I don't know, maybe just as much or more than what you did. But when I was asked to have this topic, at first I thought, okay, I enjoy youth. This is a topic that is, I like. I study somewhat and try to live out it. But as the time come closer, I realized, it just became maybe reality hit just more and more. Talking to young people with all kinds of different backgrounds, all kinds of different teachings, your church, your families, things might teach a little bit different on money. You might all have a different perspective of that. excuse me, I'm going to try to make this through. My voice is a little bit trying to fail me, but I will make it. So my focus on this is, I broke it down in a few parts. And I'm just going to go over with those. There's about four or five parts here. The importance of using God's money. And it's a concern when I see so many people, young people especially, that they struggle and then they continue to make not so good choices when their finances, they turn, a lot of them will turn to credit cards because, maybe next month will be better, and then they rack up a big bill, and once you go down that, once you start down on a downhill slide, it's a slippery slope, and it goes fast. But again, I'm not here to try to say my way is right or anything like that, but I wanted to look, what does the Bible say? What does the Bible teach on some of these things? And it has a lot to say. There's a lot of verses in there that would, Proverbs is a great book to go through if you need life advice in almost a lot of things. So I'm just going to go over this real quick, and I'm going to have to keep moving for the sake of time. So I'm going to go over the parts, and then we'll kind of dive right into it. The first part is recognizing the source of our assets or our money. That's, I think, one of the most important things. Part two will be on, touch a little bit on giving and stewardship. Part three is the dangers of greed and the love of money. Part four, we have wealth and prosperity. And part five, in closing, we'll do contentment and trust. So, as young people, one of the things that I don't think gets discussed about is before, if you come to a time in your life that you, and we've heard some about marriage, and this is one of the things that I believe should be discussed before you get married, on what pages are you on to. So many people, the one spouse believes in just, it's nothing wrong. You've got two people. There's a spender and a saver. There needs to be some common ground on to the way that this happens. Now, our minds often go to that a woman is a spender. A while back I had someone ask me, so how does it feel like to have someone spend all your money? And I said, well, I guess it's whatever. I've been blessed with a great wife. I might tend to be a little bit more of a spender in our marriage, and she does get on to me a little bit about that sometimes. But so I would like to just dive into this. The first part is the most important part, and that is recognizing the source of our assets. James 1:17 says, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variableness and neither shadow of turning. God is not a respecter of persons. And we need to recognize that every good gift that we get, every gift that we get, we have to do this. And one thing that I found through studying this is a lot of what, when he talks about money, when he talks about wealth or prosperity, I guess, or how would you say, that if we are blessed with those things, he also gives a warning of, do not forget the Lord your God. So I'm going to go to Deuteronomy 8 and read verses 6 through 18. And he says, this is out of a New Living Translation, so, for the Lord, 6, so obey the commands of the Lord your God by walking in his ways and fearing him, for the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land of flowing streams and pools of water with fountains and springs that gush out in the valleys and hills. It is a land of wheat and barley, of grapevine, fig trees, pomegranates, and of olive oil and honey. It is a land where food is plentiful and nothing is lacking. It is a land where iron is as common as a stone and copper is abundant in the hills. When you have eaten your fill, be sure to praise your God for the good land he has given you. But that is the time to be careful. Beware that in your plenty you do not forget the Lord your God and disobey his commands, regulations, and decrees that I'm giving you today. For when you have become full and prosperous and built fine houses to live in, and when your flocks and herds have become very large, and your silver and gold have multiplied along with everything else, be careful. Do not become proud at that time and forget the Lord your God who rescued you from slavery in the land of Egypt. Do not forget that he led you through the great and terrifying wilderness with its poisonous snakes and scorpions. Where it was so hot and dry, he gave you water from a rock. He fed you with manna in the wilderness and food unknown to your ancestors. He did this to humble you and to test you for your own good. He did all this so that you would never say to yourself, I have achieved this wealth with mine own strength and energy. Remember the Lord your God, he is the one who gives you power to be successful in order to fulfill the covenant confirmed to your ancestors with an oath. I would like to just touch a few verses for that. Verses from 7 to 9, I'd like to just bring it down in today's. You as youth have an opportunity, as in the land of milk and honey. God is leading you to a time in your life where you have, that you can be prosperous, or where the trials of life continue, because I'm sure they have already started. I'm not here to preach prosperity, that if you're saved and in God's will, he will just abundantly keep supplying you with lots of money. I'm not a big believer on that, but again, I'm not trying here to sway anybody's belief my way. And then in verse 10, he again brings it out. He says, do not forget to thank the Lord. And then on down in verse 17, I believe it is. is something that I think we do well to remember is he is what is when we come through our trials and through trials and error, if we fail, let's not just give up. Let's continue to look for ways. And once we do succeed, let's remember God. Let's remember who gave it to us. Let's remember who walked with us, who gave us the strength to continue. And look, I know I'm young, and I have a lot to learn yet. But there is older folks here that could probably tell you of some trials and things that go through. And, you know, there's sometimes things, and I'm sure they would tell you that it was God who walked with them through those times. Don't forget that. And he did it so that we cannot say that I have achieved this with all mine own strength. That we don't become proud and forget him. The next, I can continue to move on here. The next passage we want to look at is Ecclesiastes 5, verses 18 and 19. And it says, "Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. They taketh under the sun of all his days, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth and hath given him power to eat thereof, and to take his portion and to rejoice in his labor, that is the gift of God." So God gives us these things, and I believe he wants us to enjoy them as well. And oftentimes we hear things like, he bought that nice RV, you know, that's just a luxury, and we've got people that are struggling in the church, and he should have been, you know, that all that money could have gone to him. And I would say this, let's not be those people that point fingers like that, because you don't know. He may have gone unbeknownst to you and given them money or time or whatever it is. So, but I think God does want us to enjoy what he has given us, as long as we don't become selfish with it. Down to 1 Chronicles 29. Verses 12 and 13. It says, "Both riches and honor come from thee, and thou reignest over all. In thine hand is power and might, and in thine hand it is to make great and to give strength unto all. Now therefore, our God, we thank thee and praise thy glorious name." Verse 14 says, "For who am I, and what is my people, that we should be able to offer so willingly after this sort? For all things come of thee, and of thine own we have given thee." Again, recognizing the source of our income. And the bottom part of that verse goes into our next part two, in giving and stewardship, in tithe. We give back because what is a portion of God's money to remind us. It is like a physical, I have to say, it's like a physical reminder. If I take a little bit of my paycheck and I give it back, to remind myself each time that God is the one that gave it to me. And that's one of the things that, so now that we recognize where our money is coming from, where our, not just money, but our material things, our houses, our places, you put in there what you want, your possessions here on earth. So let's move on. In Malachi 3:10, it says, "Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour out blessings that there shall not be room enough to receive it. I'm going to turn to 2 Corinthians 9, verses 6, 7, and 12. It says, "But this I say, he that soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he that soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. And every man according as he proposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye always have all sufficiency in all things may abound. And sufficient in all things may abound to do every good work." Now on down to verse 12, it says, "For the administration of this service not only supporteth the want of the saints, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God." So there's a few reasons, that I look at it to tithe. And let's look at the word tithe just a little bit, and that this is just one of them. I found two meanings, original. They both said there was originals. Two different authors. The one said it originated from the Old English word togatha, meaning a tenth, or the Greek word, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, spelled D-E-K-A-T-E, meaning a tenth part. I hear sometimes people saying we tithe. This is getting down to, boiling it down to what the definition of the word tithe is, and I know what they mean, but let's just take, for instance, you get a $3,000 paycheck, and you take $100 out of it, and you said, "Well, I'm tithing." Math wasn't just my strongest point in school, but I thought that a tenth of $3,000 would be $300. You can do with that what you may. I know your heart. If your heart's in the right place, you can. I personally don't call it tithe because it's a misuse of that word. A tithe would be a tenth of it. But again, I'm not bashing anybody for the amount that they're giving. And it says, it not only reminds me of where it comes from and giving it back, it also helps us to provide for the church. When we give back, oftentimes it goes into, I don't know how your churches do it. It might be into the building fund. It might be into the alms fund or the hospital aid, or however you do that. Our church, we have different Sundays. We have the offering goes for those different off our places. But that goes back into the church to help build a church, to help to support the church, and it's, the costs of it. So in a sense, if we're not willing to do that, we do hold back from providing for the church, is one way of looking at it. So I would encourage you to do that. Now, excuse me. They do. Here he was saying, 2 Corinthians, it's talking about in every man according to his purpose in his heart, so let him give. So. When we look at, God gives us this. Some people, I've heard it two ways. Some people are very strong on that tithe needs to go directly back into the church. And then if there's a need outside of the church, that should be the extra that you give. But there's also, in 2 Corinthians, he says, every man according to the purpose of his heart, so let him give. Not grudgingly or a necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. Some of us were taught that we need to hold back, we need to tithe, and we can distribute it. You know, it's ours to distribute the way that we see fit. However, I would like to encourage you in one thing. However you were taught, however way you look at it, give. It's God's money. Use it wisely. And most importantly, it says not grudgingly or out of necessity or out of duty, but God loves a cheerful giver. Let's do it with a prayerful heart. Proverbs 21:20, for there is a treasure to be desired and an oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spendeth it up. And that we go into part three, with the dangers of greed and money. When we become selfish, we like to spend it all on ourselves and make sure that we are comfortable or beyond comfortable. But 1 Timothy 6:10 is, I think, a familiar verse to most of us. It says, and it is also a verse that I have heard misread or quoted a lot of times. And it says, for the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. It's 1 Timothy 6:10. I've often heard people say, oh, the money is the root of all evil. The money is not the root of all evil. It's the love of money. It's where our focus is, where our heart is. And it says there, for while some coveted after it, they erred from the faith. They shifted their focus from God to the money, from God to their possessions, whether it be your car, your that nice, I don't know what you guys do. I enjoy hunting and fishing. It might be my nice boat. It might be that new deer rifle I'm looking after. It can be you, and it doesn't have to be big things. It can be small things. You know, and those are hobbies and our work. Both can become a distraction and distract us from our walk with God. Just a few noteworthy things. Matthew 6 talks about laying up treasures in heaven and not on earth. It doesn't mean, I don't take it as we are not allowed to save up money, lay up money, but that our focus should not be on that. It should be for the kingdom of God. And that's kind of my focus here today, is reminding us to keep our focus on the kingdom and not on our earthly possessions. Ecclesiastes 5, verses 10 through 15, I would encourage you to read that sometime. It talks about how we often heard the comment, much wants more if our heart is not after God. Whatever our heart desires, it wants more of it. If it's after God, we want more of God. If it's going to be after of the world, of the earthly things, then we're going to always want more of that. Material things cannot give the contentment and peace that comes with God. When I was a young man, I was looking for identity. I was looking for things. I tried a lot of things that were not good. But some of the things I did try, just a few of the things, some were sports, some were, I've tried money. I was going to retire by the time I was at the age of 40. I was going to be this rich bachelor. Well, I failed at that first part. Well, that's okay. It's better now. I looked at people. I worked for people. I wanted to surround myself with people that were well-to-do. They were wealthy. They seemed to just have it. Good business people. I was in it to win it. And I probably could have made that. But I would have probably had the I would have had a body the age of a 60-year-old at the age of 40 if I would have continued where I was. But my focus was not my focus was not on how I could serve God with that. My focus was on trying to find affirmation, trying to find identity in that, and it there's a lot to learn. From that, you know, there's some benefits of that that I can still have today, financially because of that. You know, I didn't marry until I was almost 25, and that's okay. It was worth. Well, my wife probably wouldn't have wanted to know me before then, but that's where I'm getting at, and that's why there's one thing that concerns me when I see young people, we heard a lot of it, seek godly counsel when we are doing things, when we are, when we want to grow a business and things like that, pray about purchases, you know, before you make it. What does the Bible say? Is this for greed? Is it separating our wants and our needs? That's a big thing. You know, just an example for a want and a need is I want a trim, healthy I need a trim, healthy body, but I really want a taco. So, which am I going to have? But, yeah. So, that was Ecclesiastes. And there's another part, 1 John 3:17-19. We want to hit that a little. And it says, well, I'm going to start in verse 16. Hereby perceive we that the love of God, because he laid down his life for us, we ought to lay down our lives for our brethren. But whoso hath this world's good and seeth his brother have need and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and truth. And hereby we know that we are of the truth and shall assure our hearts before him. For if our hearts condemn us, God is greater than our hearts and knows all things. I see that a lot. We don't agree with someone. We don't like how they spend their money. We don't like how they live their life. We don't. And so they're not doing the way that we believe they should. So why should I help him? Why should I give him? Why should I go spend my time? Because if I go help him today, all he's going to do is go fishing on Saturday. I mean, what use was that? All I was helping him was he just wanted to get out of work. He's lazy, we think. But maybe he needed help. Maybe he needed help on Thursday. Let's not shut that up. If we're able to give, let's give with a joyful heart, and that's often, you know, the way it is, and I've not here to toot my own horn, but I've been in that situation to where I did not agree with the way this individual was handling money. It went almost everything against what I believed. But he had a need. You know, he was, he had medical bills. It caused him to change his job. His car was in the shop. He didn't have money to pay the mechanic bill. The mechanic won't release the car until he gets the money. What do? Am I going to sit back and go sit down with him and go, all right, I'm going to help you, but you have to do this, this, and this. I read a quote one day. It says that if we give and expect something in return, it is no longer love, but a business transaction. And that was, that was a struggle for me to, afterwards, to think, well, now what's he going to do with it? I had to give it up. And that was not, I can't brag, because without God, without the Holy Spirit, I can tell you it would not have been possible. Part four. Let's go with wealth and prosperity. Proverbs 18:9 says, he also that is slothful in his work is a brother to him that is a great waster. We read Proverbs is a lot, and from here on out, Proverbs is going to be a lot in what I have to share. And we still have a duty to do. We still have we have to be mindful. We have to be, we have to get up in the morning. We have to go to work. We can't just wake up and go, oh man, you know what, today just does not look like a good day for me. We're just gonna stay home. Now, I know how that feels. There's many days I have to get up and go, if you have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and drive about, well, I didn't actually, at that time I didn't have a lot far to drive, about 15, 20 minutes to work, and then you sit there, you load your trailer and be ready to drive at the break of dawn, drive however far, and then you scheduled your day so full to get all your work done that you're not going to be at home until 7, 8 o'clock at night, and then tomorrow morning you get up and do it again. And after a while, you kind of get burned out, and you just wake up and you go, oh boy, I'd just like to sit down with an extra cup of coffee. Do I have to go to work today? But it is us as leaders as we need to continue to. And that is where I say God can give us strength to go on throughout that day to provide. Proverbs 10:4-5. It says, he becomes poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. He that gathereth in the summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in the harvest is a son that causes shame. Again, honesty. Honesty is a great... honesty is great. That should be one of the foremost things in whatever we do, is honesty. And this goes for both sides. Or actually, all of this does. If we get ill gain, how do we expect? And just because someone is blessed and has a lot of money doesn't say that they are necessarily living right with God. God does say it rains on the just and the unjust. So, and while we need to trust in God to. And this goes to verse 5, he that gathereth in the summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth on the harvest is a son that causes shame. While we trust in God to supply our needs, he doesn't just expect us to sit back and not go to work. When he gives us a shovel, he expects us to use it and not lean on it. When we pray for a need, he allows and gives opportunities to come in our lives, and then it's up to us to do with them what you will. I'm trying to think. Some of you, how many of you in here were in the workforce, if I can say it that way, had a job during 2019-20 during COVID? You did. There's a few of you that did. And some of you may have seen that where that affected your job directly. It did mine. And at that time, I was not as diligent with my finances as I should have been. It was, you know, life hits us. If we, you know, I like to say, call life a Murphy. And when Murphy comes around, he comes around with a big stick. And he will smack you, and he doesn't care where he hits you. And he often doesn't just hit you once, he'll hit you 2-3 times in the same go-around. Our work was slowed down, and so the income wasn't just that high, and we needed to up that. So I learned to do things that I would not normally do. At that time, they had the big things about the mask and all that. We're not going to get into any of that political stuff. I have my opinion. You might have yours. Although we did not, I'm going to say this, we did not support the wearing of them. There was an opportunity there to make those and make a little cash. I don't think it was a sin to wear them. So we need to be careful to our opportunities to evaluate them with God's word as well. But I learned how to use a sewing machine. I don't say this too much because I don't want people to get the idea that I want to be a seamstress. That is far, far from my intentions. There was many days that I would go to work, come home, and my wife and I would sit down and we'd build masks. Most times it was until 11, 12 o'clock at night. And we had to get enough because our vehicle had a bad head gasket, and we needed to get that replaced. Well, we did. So we had a mechanic bill coming up. And you know, I prayed, God, to let this money come in. And I worked 11, 12 o'clock at night. I'd go to bed, get up in the morning again, and then every evening back at it. Some nights we would run. There was a few nights that we were younger, and we tried to challenge ourselves that we were going to try an all-nighter. We were going to try to work all night till the next morning. I made it all the way until about 2 or 3 o'clock, and then I went to bed. But those are things that when we work for things, you know, yes, I could have probably gone to the bank. I could have probably used a credit card and then hoped that by the next month, because they kept saying, you know, a few more weeks, just a few more weeks, and it drag on and on. I could have done those things, but I did not feel right doing that. You know, taking a loan, borrowing money and things like that, when I could work when there was opportunity. And you know, doing that established a lot of things. It established a lot of, we would often sit and talk. We would listen to podcasts. We would listen to music. We would do whatever things that we needed to. But it was, the thing with money is it's, some of the studies I've done is 20% head knowledge, roughly, and about 80% behavior. So there's people that make $50,000, $60,000 a year, and they do well. Then there's people that make $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 a year, and they live paycheck to paycheck, just barely getting by. So behavior is a lot, has to do with that. Now I'm gonna we have to keep moving, I see. There's a few more passages in Proverbs that I'm going to read, and then we'll come back and talk some more. But for now, Proverbs 11, excuse me, 1, 1, Proverbs 11, 1, 3, and 15. It says, a false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. There's where that thing in honest integrity. It says, verse 3, the integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of the transgressor shall destroy them. Verse 15 says, he that is surety for a stranger shall smart for it, and he that hateth suretyship is suretyship. I'm sorry. My vocabulary was not great in school, so you read it and be. And he that hateth it is sure. Proverbs 17, verse 18. A man void of understanding striketh hands and become a surety in the presence of a friend. Proverbs 22, starting in verse 1, verse 1, 7, and then 26. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. Verse 2 says, the rich and the poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all. Verse 17. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is a servant to the lender. Verses 26 and 7. Just one thing about Proverbs. He can use a verse or two and say one thing in the same chapter. He jumps about to something else. Verse 26 and 27. Well, let's start in 24. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go. 25, lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to the soul. Be thou not one of them that strikes hands, or of them that are sureties for debts. If thou hast nothing to pay, why should he take away thy bed from under thee? Proverbs 6, Proverbs 6, 1 through 5. It says, My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, if thou hast striketh thy hands with a stranger, thou art snared up with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself. When thou art come into the hands of a friend, go humble thyself and make sure thy friends. And this is what he tells us to do when we get in. When we give ourselves into this, if we owe someone something, owe them money, owe them whatever. It says, give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thy eyelids. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as a bird from the hand of the fowler. And then go to the ant, thou slayer, consider her ways and be wise. Which, having no guide or overseer or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. This part is a tender subject. I realize a lot of people look at that a little different than I do. I feel today's society, they're pushing everything of borrowed money is the way of the future. Nowhere in the Bible have I been able to find that it confirms or that it supports that using a money. On the other side, I'm not saying I don't believe it's a sin as far as, you know, you need to get a mortgage. I believe in being a good steward is spending, is borrowing as little as I have to, if you want to put it that way. And today, sometimes we're often labeled as weird if you want to buy that car, you're going to buy that car that's $4,000 or $5,000 versus you're going to go buy yourself a $30,000-$40,000 car because you can pay $5,000 cash. A lot of people will, they want to just, you know, be, you know, it's like, well, but a new car doesn't have the problems. You don't have those mechanic bills, and it will go longer, and it will last longer, and you know, there's a lot of ways to try to justify the buying of that. I have nothing against nice vehicles. I have nothing against nice houses. I have nothing against that. The way I see it is, at the end of life, when we get up to the judgment seat, he's not going to go look at us and go, you drove a nice vehicle. You had a beautiful place. You kept it up. You mowed it. Man, you just did everything. You did it. Come on, man. That's not what he wants. It's the heart. You know, I don't care what you drive. I'm unbiased a little bit on the brand of vehicle you drive. Now some of you might get into arguments. You're going to argue with me. Is he going to drive a GM or a Dodge or a Ford? Or I drive what I can pay for and what makes me money. So, I don't know. I'm too easy to please some days, I guess. I'm not condemning that, but personally, for us, the way I look at the Bible and stuff, I pay cash for all my vehicles. That's just telling from my side of it. I get that what they're trying to say, but I also know people that have bought new vehicles. They ended up with expensive mechanic bills, replacing motors, doing whatever. I have family members that are into that. And then life happens. Remember this, whenever you get a loan, whenever you get something, you raise your risk. That is, you can say, well, I can make the payment. Well, you can, if you keep your job, if you stay healthy, and if your work does not slack like it did for me. Last summer, I went from working in 2023, I was working 5-6 days a week, as hard as I could go. In 2024, I thought this was gonna be great. Most weeks I work 2 days, sometimes 3 days. And if you have, because of, I delivered storage barns, and because I had oversized stuff, my insurance was, just alone, was close to $1,200 a month. And I have a clean record. So, and your fuel in a semi is not exactly fuel efficient. You spend a lot of money on that. So working 2 to 3 days a week, if I just banked on that being I'd be busy all the time, I would have ran myself into a lot of trouble. That's just, again, I'm just telling from my experiences of why I do the things I do. And when I go back to the Bible, I find it to be, the way I feel that it should be. The thing about money is it changes a lot of things. Poor, I've seen what it's like to be poor. I've seen what it's like to be well-to-do. Money is a little, is a very, we can't do without money. None of you got here today without money, unless you walked. So, it brings out things that are in us, our characters. If we're broke, it can make us more broke. If we're rich, it can create, I can multiply our wealth. It can destroy families and relationships. Or if we're a person that is just arrogant, obnoxious, with a little money, we get a lot of money, all I can say is God help the people around you. Because that does not change with a lot of money. It only multiplies. I think out of respect for the people, but I can tell you from personal experience as a family, as far as money stuff goes, it will destroy that. Relationships, I'm just gonna give you an example. If one of you gave your friend $5,000 and then he took that to pay because he was in a financial jam, and then about 2 months later or 3 months later he come around, he goes and buys a very expensive boat. Come Christmas time, your conversation around the Christmas table is going to be a whole lot different, because you're going to be thinking, I gave him $5,000, he should be giving me, why did he go buy that, and he should be paying me back. I've seen where people, I know of people where they've got helped a lot, and then when you help someone else, they become the entitlement of, oh, well, we should have had that help. Why aren't you helping us? Again, it all goes back to the heart, how our heart is. On the flip side, if you are helped, be generous of it, be mindful of that. Don't go out and frivolously just spend money. So there's also things of churches. When we appoint offices, you know, we want to have people that use God's money according to the Bible. There's a key verse in Luke 16:10 says, if you are faithful in little things, you will be faithful in large ones. But if you are dishonest in little things, you won't be honest in greater responsibilities. Let's remember that. That's my hope through this is, and that's kind of the key verse of the whole thing, is let's create responsibility with the things we have now, and as we grow, to continue to keep our heart right with God. First, in closing, and in part five is contentment and trust. Hebrews 13:5. Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have, for he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Philippians 4:17, and this is the same God who takes care of me will supply all your needs from his glorious riches which have been given to us in Christ Jesus. Psalms 62 verses 7 through 12. It says, In God is my salvation and my glory. The rock of my strength and my refuge is in God. Trust in him in all times, ye people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us, Selah. Surely men of low degree are vanity, and men of high degree are a lie. To be laid in the balance, they are altogether lighter than vanity. Trust not in oppression, and become not vain in robbery. If riches increase, set not your heart upon them. God has spoken once, twice have I heard this, that the power belongeth to God. Also unto thee, O Lord, belong mercy, for thou renderest to every man according to his work. 1 Timothy 6:5-11. It talks about taking care of, verse 8. It says, but if any provide not for his own, and especially for those in his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. That was 1 Timothy 5, verse, And then 1 Timothy 6, verses 5-12. Perverse disputings of men, corrupt minds, destitute the truth, supposing that gain is godliness, from such withdraw thyself. But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. We have gone on down through there. Verse 10 we've covered. Verse 6 is a key verse. But godliness with contentment is great gain. That word godliness is very important, that we keep that to get. Again, I just want to say thank you for your attention. Thank you for coming. I do realize we are from different backgrounds, churches, families. We've all been taught different. You'll probably go home and somebody will tell you, well, he knows nothing about it. Maybe not. I don't know. But my hope and my prayer was this, that we recognize the source of where we get our things, and two, that we would consider the Bible, like that we would go to the Bible and see what it teaches and make decisions based on that. I hope you didn't feel like I was pointing fingers or knocking people down for the way they do things, but I wrote a few things down on steps of this. I just seen this now. I got maybe a few minutes yet, but the first step is to recognizing money or possessions in a godly way, and is recognizing the one who gives it. And then we need a why. We need a reason to why we do things. We need a purpose of why do we do the things we do the way we do. My why is my purposes. I'm just going to tell you. I believe there's so much in it is my way of providing for my family, according to what I believe the Bible teaches. Again, I have nothing against wealth. I have nothing against fancy cars, places. You can have whatever you want. It really doesn't bother me. And I feel like it can be on me to make a difference with my family, to where we can stop the poverty that comes from just not having a plan, not being intentional with our money was the word I was trying to get to be intentional. We tithe, we've gone over that. Why? Savings, again, I believe it's a great way to prepare when old Murphy comes and wants to smack us. You have a rainy day fund, to where when the alternator goes out on your car, your washer quits working. We actually had that happen. I used to have a Jeep Cherokee, had a V8 4.7 in it. You could pass most things except gas stations. The motor blew up. It may or may not have said something to do with driver error. You do with whatever you want with that. But at that same time, our washing machine gave out. And it was a brand new washer, or almost a brand new washer. So now I needed a new vehicle. I'll just admit, probably due to some things, the way I was driving. And then I needed to fix the washer. And I'm going to say, just personally, was a relief on me. It didn't feel good to dive into that savings account, but it was a relief for me to be able to do that. Again, I'm not there. And needs over wants, I think we went on that. One thing I've got written down here is taxes. It is scriptural to pay taxes. Yes, we do have laws that we can have write-offs. As long as we do, let's not cheat on them. If we can do it legally without getting in trouble, I don't believe that's cheating or whatever. But there is a vast amount of people in our Anabaptist circles that do not realize and are not taught. And I've had my eyes really opened on that, on how many, about the importance of doing that. And I just want to say something a little bit. I don't know how it is in your state, in Canada, but if you do not pay taxes for a long enough time, they will give you a free spot in a little cell and you go to jail. So just something that I do, or I have wrote down, is when you consider not paying your taxes and you don't have money, too many times it comes from people buying things they really don't need, spending excessive money on vacations, places, vehicles. There's one thing I ask myself, is it worth it? And I'm just going to use a vehicle, for example. I'm not bashing anybody here. If I buy my wife a $80,000, $90,000 Escalade, and I don't pay my tax, and that causes me to go into that I can't pay whatever, they come and take me to jail after however many years. Is it worth it for me, for my wife to have, that's the trade-off that the risk that I'm doing is for my wife to be without her husband and my children to be without their father so that she can have a nice place or something like that. And I wonder if we don't sometimes take the seriousness of that, but I hope this was, again, I don't know, this is good for me to go through this. I learned a lot in it. I still have a lot to learn. And I like to sit down and talk with older people with more wisdom than I have when it comes down to stuff like that. And that's what I'd like to encourage you. Again, I hope this was meant to draw your mind to this. So with that, let's, in closing, let's have a prayer.